Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Tuesday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Auction Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what's going on?
All right, quick. Yeah. I did this to you. I'm going to do this to Sarah and Jordan.
Okay.
How much money did Josh Rosen make in his NFL career?
I know. You told me.
I know. I just said. I know you know the answer to this. I'm asking Jordan and Sarah. How much money did Josh Rosen make?
Enough to fix all the trees that went down last night in the wind.
Oh, God.
He can replace all of the dead trees.
Because I had one that's just absolutely trashed in my front yard.
I'm going to say $28 million.
Sarah?
I'm going to guess $20 million.
$18 million. Josh Rosen made $18 million.
Yes.
And he may or may not be on the verge of joining his fifth football team since the Cardinals dropped.
But Trent Dilfer
told... I messed that up in the update. Fifth, not fourth.
You forgot about Tampa Bay.
I did forget about Tampa Bay. How could I?
The sad, lonely sight of him sitting in the stands last year watching Tampa Bay play. And Josh is just sitting there with the saddest... most puppy dog eyes you ever saw on
Does
any
he have
mass
a Super
face?
Bowl ring?
Oh, I don't know.
Did Josh Rosen get a Super Bowl ring?
I don't know.
Let's Google.
Oh, we got to find that out.
I don't know.
Yeah, I've been on all these.
When did he join San Francisco?
In last year, he didn't finish the season with Tampa Bay.
Oh, so if he would have gotten one, it would have been for
partial part of the season.
Yeah, I wonder if he did. Can you imagine?
I got a Super Bowl ring. Take that!
Super Bowl ring, 18 mil in the bank. Laugh all you want, people.
Yeah.
Laugh all you want. Mock me all you want.
It's more than Matt Leinart's got.
That's the thing. We're like, ha-ha, but he also has 18 million in it.
I can't hear you over my compound interest for making $18 million when I was 24 years old.
Repeat this sound in 6 years when Josh is taking you to a Super Bowl or gone to multiple Pro Bowls.
Who would you rather be, Matt Leinart or Josh Rosen? That should be the poll question.
Oh, boy.
Whose life would you rather have, Matt Leinart or Josh Rosen?
Do I actually have to make that?
Leinart has actually rebounded quite nicely as an analyst. He's all over the Fox college football. He does TV commercials. I mean, his NFL career was terrible.
Yeah.
But because he won the Heisman, he'll always be held in some regard in the college football world.
He probably had more girlfriends in college.
Well, I don't know who physically could have more girlfriends than Matt Leinart.
Bow out of that conversation.
Yeah, and I don't think we need a poll question on that. But
who would you rather be, Matt Leinart or Josh Rosen? I think, made more money.
How about this? You post that on your Twitter account, Gambo.
If you really want to know.
Be one of these guys, who would you
really
rather be?
Know. Yeah. So, yeah, if you missed it, and Sarah just said it in the SportsCenter update, Josh Rosen, released by the San Francisco 49ers, apparently had recently just been complaining about the lack of reps that he's getting. Not complaining, but just kind of matter-of-factly. I'm not getting a whole lot of reps in pro. Yeah. Of course you're not.
You know why? Because you're Josh Rosen.
Because you're Josh Rosen. And he's Trey Lance, and he's Jimmy Garoppolo, and you have no place in the future of that organization. So, no, you're not going to get a lot of reps. Let's tell you what our top story of the day is here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in. Brought to you by Revitalize Weight Loss.
Kyler Murray got behind the mic today in the podium for the Arizona Cardinals. Of course, there's been a lot of conversation about Kyler. Didn't make an appearance in Friday's preseason opener against the Dallas Cowboys after we were told that he would. He didn't, and he made it very clear today it didn't really bother him that he didn't play in the preseason opener against the Dallas Cowboys.
Definitely wasn't mad about it, but... gonna play a little bit, I'm sure. I don't know how much, but I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you go in there, you're playing, you want to do well. So
if you missed it there at the beginning, I'm definitely not mad about it. You know, not playing on Friday, but I might play a little this Friday. He kind of went into further detail, Gambo, about whether he takes anything at all from the preseason.
I mean, it's not real. You know, I see it as like, go out and play well. It's not real. You play bad, you feel you got a bad taste in your mouth, but. At the end of the day, you know, it's reps, it's live reps. So, you know, you take something away from it, but at the end, like I said, it's not, you know, this doesn't count. So, I don't know. That's how I feel about it.
I mean, if it did count, the Baltimore Ravens would have like, you know, like six rings right now.
The Baltimore Ravens?
Yes. they're masters of the preseason. Go look up the last time the Baltimore Ravens lost a preseason football game. Oh, I dare you.
Is this? You dare me?
I dare you.
Wow.
Go look
you
up
hear
the
that,
last
everybody?
Time
I've been challenged.
Mm-hmm. We're close to a triple dog dare.
Whoa.
Yeah, I double dare you.
Whoa.
Oh, I dare you.
Man, I don't know if I have the temerity to look it up on Google to see if the Ravens have ever lost a preseason game or not.
I don't know the last time I actually dared somebody.
My manhood's been challenged.
I just have a flashback to the 80s. I triple dare you.
I don't really feel like looking it up. Have they never lost in the preseason?
They don't lose in the preseason.
Really? Oh, I didn't know
they
that.
They don't lose preseason games.
That just shows you how much.
I'm sure Jordan's looking it up right now.
Little attention I paid to the preseason. I had no idea the Ravens winning
they
in the preseason was a thing.
They never lose in the preseason.
Really?
They win all of their games.
I am truly.
Every year.
You know how they say you learn something new every day? That's the new thing I've learned.
They
today.
Are the preseason champions. You know, they like Kyler Murray, you don't get anything for it.
Yeah. What do you get for that?
Look, Dave Burns didn't even know. Like, nobody even knew that.
How big of a deal could it be if Dave Burns didn't even know about
it,
right?
Man, Ravens have won 18 straight preseason.
Get out of here. Are you serious?
There you go.
Their last loss was back in 2015 in the preseason.
See? Told you.
Wow.
They don't lose in the preseason.
The most meaningless stat ever foisted on the human
2016, 17, 18, 19. They're the champions of the preseason. They never
That's
lose.
That's like being Cactus League champions.
Seriously.
Yeah,
you don't get no
might
trophy
be worse.
For being. It might be worse. It might be worse. At least the Cactus League, you get to enjoy some nice weather and all that stuff. Anyway, we digress. Kyler Murray, in fact, was actually a huge fan of last year's preseason because there was no preseason last year.
I loved last year. Just because, I mean, you practice every day hard, like, against your team, and then you come out of the gates, you know, running. I mean, that's how it is in college. You know, obviously this is the NFL, but I just, you know, I like the way it was set up, not having to kind of I don't like taking days off, you know, and in the preseason games, you're playing a little bit, you're not playing at all. It's just a weird flow of things, you know, and I kind of like the fact that we practice hard every day up until the season started.
Is it weird to play a game that doesn't count?
Like I said, I'm not very fond of it. I like going hard in practice, and then on Sunday, you know, letting it, you know, the chips fall where they may. The preseason is just... It's like I said, it doesn't count. I don't know.
Is he wrong?
No, everybody's no. There's not a right or wrong answer here. Some guys I want to play because I want to hit guys. I want to get used to the physicality of playing. Kyler doesn't want to get hit. I'm a quarterback. I don't want to get hit. I could work on my timing and all of that stuff in practice. But there are other guys that they can't play as physical in practice as they can in a preseason game because you're hitting your own guys. You know, so I think for other positional players, there is a desire to want to play in these games to get up to a level physically that you need to be at for the regular season. So I think it's different for each player.
I agree with you, and not just for the physicality aspect of it, but where your kind of standing is on the roster. Yesterday on the show, we spent a lot of time talking about Eno Benjamin. You know what? The preseason might not matter to Kyler Murray. I assure you it very much matters to Eno Benjamin. That was the first competitive football game he played in nearly 2 years.
Yeah.
He's trying to make a roster. He's trying to prove he belongs. He needs the preseason to prove that he belongs on an NFL roster. Kyler doesn't need it. And it doesn't mean Kyler's wrong and Eno's right.
No, there's no right or wrong answer.
It's just a matter of perspective. And from Kyler, if I were Kyler Murray, I probably wouldn't want to be in the preseason either. And I'll just tell you right now, as a fan of football, I didn't miss the preseason at all last year. Not one bit.
Me either.
I mean, it was just like, oh, good. I mean, a football game that counts without trying to fool me into thinking that this one. But again, in some ways, preseason football does count. It did count to see Marco Wilson play well. It did count to see Zaven. Zaven Collins needed those reps, man.
Younger players who were trying to make an impact and prove their worth, and it means something to them.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean anything to J.J. Watt or Chandler Jones.
Nope.
Doesn't mean anything to A.J. Green or DeAndre Hopkins. But it means something to Marco Wilson and Zaven Collins and Eno Benjamin. So, you know, to each his own.
Who decides if you play in the preseason, Kyler?
Does your... how you play or what, I guess, when you play or if you play, is that a conversation you're having with Cliff? Or are they coming to you and saying, this is what we want to do?
No, I mean, they've said what they wanted to do. And, I mean, I do what they say, so.
We talked about that a little bit yesterday.
Yes.
Though not in terms of Kyler, but more of in terms of Cliff. You know, I do what they tell me to do. And they don't want me to play Kyler, I'm not going to play Kyler. And Kyler's the same way. Hey, man, tell me whatever you want me to do. You want me to play? Mm-hmm. I'll play. You don't want me to play? I won't play. But just him making it clear that he'd rather not play, he is kind of using that opportunity to express his opinion, right?
You go to Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, and you go to the veteran quarterbacks that have established themselves, Ben Roethlisberger, and you say, what do you need? Do you want to play? Do you not want to play? Do you want the reps? Do you need the reps? You got a lot of new guys here and there. Do you want to get out there for a series or two? So you discuss it with them, you know, and you go over with them. So I think with the veteran quarterback that's established, it's probably a decision that's made within a group of people all discussing it. With Kyler Murray, you know, you decide as the head coach, what do you want? Do you need him to play or do you not need him to play?
When we come back, the Phoenix Suns run to the NBA Finals opened eyes all over the NBA. And today, their rise in stature was rewarded big time. And we'll explain how next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Man, it's August 17th.
Okay, yes.
I
was at the grocery store the other day. The Oktoberfest beers are already lining the walls.
I was at a store last week. Halloween costumes and candy was already out.
Yeah, there was like the Spirit Halloween store. I saw the sign up for the one in our hood out there in G-Town.
In 3 months, we'll be hanging Christmas lights.
Yeah, you know what? This might be the year where I'm learning from the great Gambo when it comes to the Christmas lights thing.
I got a guy.
It might be time for the guy.
Yeah, I don't do it.
It might be time for the guy.
I got a guy.
It might be
Puts
time.
Puts them all up, takes them all down.
It might be time for the guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Tell him what color you want. Like if you want some trees done. And
yeah, I know it's real first world problems. I admit that. But after doing it last year, last year was really, really hard because my dad was sick. It was right before he passed, and I just didn't feel like putting up Christmas lights. But I remember putting them up last year thinking, this is it. I'm done
with
this.
I'm not doing this anymore.
I am not doing this anymore. If there are services out there that will do this for me, I'm going to find out how much those services cost. I will inquire within. Yeah. Why are we playing Christmas music on August 17th? Boy, that's a great question. It really is. Because the Phoenix Suns, all they want for Christmas is to be on national TV. And that's exactly what's going to happen. Phoenix Suns got one of the coveted Christmas Day schedules for the 2021 season. They will take on the Golden State Warriors at Footprint Center.
What does
Center.
That mean?
Save that for...
Oh, man. You just
save
said
that
this,
for Christmas.
You just said the Suns are taking on the Warriors, and the only thing I could think of was, and what does that mean for the...
Yeah. And it creates...
Jordan was ready. He like brought his microphone
It's
over.
A reflex.
It's a reflex.
Jordan just immediately, Where's the mic? 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Footprint Center on Christmas Day. The Phoenix Suns will host the Golden State Warriors. It will create...
My God, when you said Footprint Center, I was like, the game's on the road? I'm not used to that yet.
Yeah, Footprint Center. Oh, I'm very not used to it either.
You said that. I'm like, where are they playing? They're playing on the road? Okay, no.
Yep.
Playing at home.
Very not used to that yet. Creates a very unique Christmas Day doubleheader around here because the Arizona Cardinals are hosting the Indianapolis Colts that night at 6:15. If you're going to both and celebrating Christmas, man.
Wow.
For those about to rock, we salute you. Knock yourself out.
That's a big day.
That's a big, big day if you're going from one to the other and doing Christmas presents and all that stuff.
I leave for Alaska the next day.
It is a sign of respect and to look at the other teams that are there.
It's a good way to put it.
I mean, it really is. The Lakers are going to play the Nets. That's obviously huge. The Knicks are going to play the Hawks. That's huge because of their playoff rematch, the fact that it's New York and Trae Young. Luka Doncic and the Mavs will play the Jazz in Salt Lake City that night. And then the Celtics will take on the Milwaukee Bucks. In fact, I just saw a note that Nikola Jokic becomes the first defending MVP to not be featured the next year on Christmas Day since the Christmas Day games began back in 2008.
Wow.
Like the MVP almost always gets one of those Christmas Day games. Nikola
Jokic, don't have one.
They do not have
a
Christmas Day
game. Well, part of it could be Jamal Murray's. He's not going to be back. I mean, he might be back. I don't even know if he's going to be back.
Yeah.
Jamal Murray tore his ACL in the middle of April. That's when he tore his ACL. Now, the recovery, it used to be a year, but now sometimes you can come back in like 9 months, right? So if it was April, middle of April, he's not going to be back by Christmas, Jamal Murray.
No.
So he's not going to be back, you know, the first 2 months of the season, maybe three, no Jamal Murray for the Nuggets.
And, of course, the Warriors, obviously, they've struggled the last couple of years. But the expectation is, with Klay Thompson coming back, that the Warriors will be back, be relevant, very much matter, very much be, you know, they got still one of the biggest stars in the game in Steph Curry.
They're just old. Steph's still great, right? But Steph Curry's been in this league for a long time.
I know it's silly and superficial.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very happy the Suns are on Christmas Day. First time since 2009, they earned it. They deserved it. They earned the right to be in the conversation of the elite teams around the league to play on the biggest showcase day of the year for the league. And I would have been frankly pissed off if they had not gotten a Christmas
Would it
Day
have been
game.
A sign of disrespect?
Yes, I think so.
And this is so. A sign of respect.
I think this is a sign of respect.
Absolutely. You got two stars on the team. You've got a budding star in DeAndre. You've got a star in Booker. He got an Olympic gold medal. He was in the NBA Finals. You got Chris Paul, one of the biggest names out there. And they won. I mean, it would have been a little bit of a slap in the face if they didn't get that Christmas Day game. I totally agree.
And again, it's silly and superficial, and I would have felt dumb for feeling disrespected about it. But at the same time, it would have been disrespectful because that's the rarefied air where if you have the season the Suns had and you go as far as the Suns did, you've earned a ticket to be broadcast on that day, especially when you're featuring two of the great stars of the NBA the way they do.
Listen, it's been plenty of times when players on the Suns or something like you felt a little disrespect, but it's like you're not winning, so you got to just deal with it. Like, you just deal with it.
Yep.
You know, if a player wasn't getting the respect he deserved, but you just dealt with it because the Suns weren't winning. Now that they're winning, that's what comes with it. You know, you want to put good matchups together. That's a great matchup.
It's not just Christmas that was announced today, too. The national TV games for opening week in the NBA were announced as well. And the Suns are going to open up big time on national TV, as you would expect. They'll open the year at home against the Denver Nuggets on October 20th.
Okay.
That will be a nationally televised game.
A team that they swept.
Yes.
In the playoffs, the team that did not have Jamal Murray in the playoffs, and they will not have Jamal Murray when they start the season.
2 days later, they will follow that nationally televised tilt with a game against the Los Angeles Lakers from Staples Center on October 22nd. Both games tip at 7 o'clock. Both games will be on ESPN.
Yeah, and that'll be interesting because that's a new-look Lakers team with Carmelo Anthony and Russell Westbrook and, you know, Anthony Davis, I don't know, he'll have an ankle sprain or a calf contusion or a quad contusion or back tightness or something. But you got to imagine that there's going to be some kind of injury for Anthony Davis.
A thinly veiled shot at Anthony Davis right
there.
I mean,
that guy is thin as paper. Like, I've never seen a guy with as many injuries as Anthony Davis. That guy played about half of the games last year, and all the time it's just always something different. There's always some kind of different injury with Anthony. That guy's got to get – he's got to work out. He's got to get tougher and stronger and build his body up. And he can't miss half of your games.
Mm-hmm. He's missed a lot of games.
He misses a ton of games.
He misses too many games. The full national television schedule is coming out on Friday, this Friday. So I imagine,
we just got a sneak peek today? Is that what it is?
Yeah, we got just a little taste of it, of opening week and of Christmas Day.
So the first home game is the Nuggets.
Yes.
That's the first home game nationally televised.
Yeah.
Then there's a road game nationally televised against the Lakers. And what was the date on that?
The 22nd.
Okay.
So,
and then Christmas Day.
And Christmas Day. Those are the games we know about. So
that date is the 25th, in case you're wondering.
Christmas Day is the 25th. It's good to know.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a spicy start to the show today, isn't it?
I should know that. I think I do.
I think you do. Yeah, I think you're fairly well versed in what day Christmas Day is. That's the season opener for the Suns. The season opens on October 20th. Today is August 17th.
That's 64 days.
That's crazy. Where did this year go?
It's crazy.
This NBA schedule, though, has been awesome as a fan because every week it's something new.
It's
something so different.
True. It's true. It has. And now next year we'll get back to normal. We'll get back to kind of a normal, slower off season for the NBA.
82 games,
yeah.
Not 72.
But I'm kind of with Jordan. I've really enjoyed this. Now, obviously, it helps the Suns win to the NBA Finals, but how quickly, bang, 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 everything has happened. The draft, free agency, preseason starts in a month. I think
the Olympics.
I forgot about the Olympics. I mean, it has just been one after another after another. It's been fun.
It really has not been. It was almost like football this year where there was no off season.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what it was like. What was it like to have a front row seat for Tyler Gilbert's no-no? And what will it be like to have Archie Bradley across the field tonight? D-backs manager Tori Lovello, he joins us for his weekly segment next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Your exclusive home of the D-backs.
Diamondbacks.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. D-backs manager Tori Lovello joins Burns and Gambo to talk D-backs baseball. Presented by PNC Bank. Financial tools and tech to help make things easier.
Really looking forward to talking to Tori Lovello this week, given all that history that went on at the ballpark on on Saturday night. They replayed the game last night on Bally Sports Arizona, and I watched it, and I still just had this huge grin on my face. And joining us right now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, the manager of the Diamondbacks, Tori Lovello, here on the Burns and Gambo Show. You still smiling about that one, Skip?
Of course I am. You know, we all are. That hangover is going to last for a while. Look, in a year where it's been very challenging and grinding, when we can have a good moment like that and celebrate that unbelievable moment, we're going to let it run for as long as possible.
All right, he wasn't protected by the Dodgers. You guys got him Rule 5. Give me your first thoughts of when you first saw him pitch. When was it?
Well, it was his first bullpen in spring training. I'm standing behind him over at Salt River, and I could see that he was commanding the baseball on both sides of the plate. And, you know, he was interesting because he was left-handed, and we were always looking for left-handed bullpen pieces, not knowing very much about him, whether he was a starter or a reliever. But he was very intriguing to me because he was running a cut fastball to the glove side of the plate for him, and then a two-seamer, four-seamer cutter to the arm side of the plate. And I just felt like it was a really good combination of things. And then I saw this breaking ball pop out, and I thought, this is very interesting. But I really locked on to him. I stand behind the pitchers when they're throwing live batting practices on the field. I get out there in the middle of the field, and I could see the way the hitters were reacting to him. At that point, I thought, this kid's going to pitch in the big leagues at some point during the course of this year.
We had him on the show after he made his major league debut, that relief outing. We had him on the show. Great story. Great kid. Really liked him. Now let's talk about the decision to give him a chance to be a starter. When did you and your staff decide, hey, you know what? He's got four pitches. He's got good command. Let's see if we can make him a starter.
Well, player development was pounding the table for him. Player development said that he was easily one of their best starters down in Triple A, and he deserved the opportunity to start a baseball game. You know, getting up here, the necessity was mostly in the bullpen, so we just got his feet wet. We gave him a soft landing, but then we started to maneuver a little bit. We got banged up with a little bit of COVID. We had some guys stepping out, and there were some gaps in the rotation, and we were trying to fill it. And we thought, you know, look, why not see what this looks like? The front office obviously was getting information from player development. And it just fit. It fit, and we just thought, why not? Let's take a look at it. The Padres had a team of very, very good left-handed hitters. That's typically not a great matchup for left-handed hitters. So we thought he could control the zone on both sides of the plate, get right-handed hitters out. It was a good day. And it's the Padres. You're never supposed to have a good day against the Padres, and that's what makes it even more special.
Tori Lovello, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Diamondbacks manager, they're getting ready to take on the Phillies tonight, but we're still obviously talking about Tyler Gilbert's no-no from over the weekend, the first no-hitter thrown by a Diamondbacks pitcher at Chase Field in the history of the organization. I want to read you a line from the story that Steve Gilbert wrote about the game that I read the next day. Before the game, it was decided 85 pitches would be the max. Mike Fetters was filling in for pitching coach Matt Hergis. He impressed upon Lovello the uniqueness of what Gilbert might be in the process of accomplishing and urged him to stretch the limits a bit. How exactly did that conversation go with Fetters when you kind of decided a moving target on the pitch count was the way to go, given the uniqueness of what he might be about to accomplish?
Right. You know, I already pulled the plug on somebody doing something like that in Alex Young, right? He had 80 pitches through six, right? But this is a different scenario. He'd been stretched out as a starter. I knew there would be some wiggle room. And then my negotiation started with the medical team and the people that are making some very, very good key decisions on the health of our pitchers. So the 85 quickly turned into 95. That was after my first negotiation. And, you know, I did have a conversation after the seventh inning with Mike Fetters, and he said, hey, man, just open up your eyes here. Don't be blind by the fact that this kid's doing something really special. I knew that. And I'm telling you, after the seventh inning, I was the most uptight guy in the stadium because I was potentially going to have to make a really, really tough decision, or I was going to send him out. And I was going to take a little bit of the matters into my own hands, and we got the ultimate number, the final number, to 105. I told myself I would probably start his last batter, the 105, 106 range. So that tells me, based on the chance I was willing to take and the sacrifice I was willing to make, he probably was absolute max in that 110, 112 pitch range. So Fett deserves a lot of credit. He slowed it down for me. You know, I stepped away for a second, got away from the stimulus down the staircase, and I thought, you know, he's absolutely right. Don't get in the way of something that could be so, so special. That's what you got coaches for. They talk some common sense into you from time to time.
Three pitches, three outs in the eighth inning. How much of a factor did that play in making that a much easier decision for you, Skip?
Well, I turned and looked, and I saw Cole Calhoun watching me pace up and down in the dugout for those three pitches. Right? He could probably tell a good story about what I look like. But after that third pitch, I said, run him out there. He's going to do this. He's going to finalize this. And it was a no-brainer at that point. So I was thankful for those three pitches at 91 pitches. I knew that he had a lot of wiggle room. It was lining up really well, and he finished the deal. And that's hard to do. Look, we've all rolled 9 or 10 strikes in a row, right? We're standing on the line, and we're getting ready to bowl a perfect game, and we throw a couple gutter balls. Nobody knows the pressure or the feeling he has, but I could tell he was slowing it down. He looked the exact same in the ninth inning that he did in the first inning, and he went out and did it.
Last guy to do it was Bobo Holloman, probably an old teammate of yours in 1953 with St. Louis. I mean, it is just an amazing accomplishment to think that, you know, it's been that long. That guy only pitched 1 year in the major leagues, but, you know, I know a couple of guys in the 1800s that did it. But now let's just talk about something else I think is really important, too. You know, you won the series. The Dalton Varsho home run, the walk-off was outstanding. And you guys played some, you know, outside of that last game, you guys played some really good baseball against the Padres.
We did. And, you know, we've been trending in that direction now for a few weeks. And, you know, look, I told these guys, you know, right around the All-Star break, you know, the year isn't going the way we wanted to. We're coming out of this. Let's go out and play our best baseball for the second half. We can't win 90 games. It's not going to be possible. But what we can do is play like we are preparing to win 90 games and go out and play better than 500 baseball for the remainder of this season. Let's see how good we can be for the remainder of the season from this day forward. And on top of that, we're in a rugged division right now. You know, three teams are going to be making the playoffs. So we're going to be tested against the best. And you know, how can you get any better? You should be asking for this, to play against the best, because it's going to help you improve a little bit quicker. And then the final piece of that puzzle is that we can knock some people around and knock them in or out of a race. That would be the ultimate. If we could take care of some business against some of those teams that are getting ready to do something special and have a really good September and potentially a playoff berth, if we can, you know, ruffle a few feathers, we've done our job. And I think everybody's focused on that right now.
All right, the potential top pick in next year's draft is a guy named Elijah Green. He's projected to be the top pick next year. So I'm just going to ask you, do you ever look at the standings to see what the Orioles are doing? And has anyone in the organization ever had a conversation with you about these standings?
Nobody's had that type of conversation with me. You know, I asked Ami El-Sade, who is our GM, and he's also in charge of the amateur side. You know, I ask him questions about the players for next year's draft all the time. I do know the name Elijah Green, and he is a great talent. You're absolutely right. But it's never, ever my intention to finish is the worst team in baseball. That's not a goal I ever set out for. I want to run some people down, and that's perfectly clear. That's been my intent. That's been my message to these guys. And, yes, we do follow the standings. That's our job. We got to pay attention to what's going on around us. As heartbreaking as it is to look at it, we still have to pay attention to it and embrace where we are and say we've done this to ourselves. So we want to run some people down. That's our mindset. And wherever we finish in the draft order next year, it'll be an indication it's the year we've had. But like I said, we want to chase it down, and we want to get into the thick of the things, not be the first pick for next year's draft.
Real quick before we let you go, Torrey, you bump into Archie yet?
I haven't. You know, I've been thinking about that. I've exchanged texts with him since the day we traded him, so I know that he's doing great. I'm looking forward to it. We've had a lot of guys passing in and out of this clubhouse that have moved on to new teams. Archie was very special to me. It's going to be a good it'll be a good reunion for us. I'll spend a couple minutes just catching up with him and seeing how he's doing away from the game and inside the game as well.
Absolutely. Torrey, thanks for the time. We appreciate it. Good luck tonight.
All right, guys. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Skip. Torrey Lovello, manager of the Diamondbacks. They get ready to take on Archie Bradley and the Philadelphia Phillies this evening. He joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Twitter poll time.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
All right, we normally do this at the beginning of the segment. Sarah, you've got our Twitter poll question of the day today. People can vote on it on Burns and Gambo, at Burns and Gambo on Twitter. Mm-hmm. What you got today?
All right, three major games announced for the Phoenix Suns to start off this season. We know they're playing that Christmas Day game against the Warriors, and then there's their season opener against the Nuggets on October 20th. And then 2 days later, they'll play the Lakers on the road. And both of those games will be on ESPN. So we're asking, of those three big-time games, which one are you most excited about and why?
Christmas Day. Christmas Day. Christmas Day.
Self-explanatory.
It's Christmas Day.
Yeah.
It's special place if you're an NBA team.
It is. Absolutely. 64% of our voters also went with Christmas Day. 23% went with the Lakers on October 22nd, and a lot of people said, because I want to kick their butts. And then 13% are most excited for the season opener. Surprising results for me.
It never fades when talking about the Lakers. I'm a little surprised, too. I thought the home opener might get a little more love, but
right?
It didn't. When we come back, you can vote on the poll question at Burns and Gambo. One word is where you can find it. When we come back, it is Phoenix Children's Hospital Give-A-Thon Week. And we look forward to telling you more stories and helping raise money for this great treasure in our valley next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station in the Arizona Sports app. Give-a-thon on the Burns and Gambo Show.
So far, we have raised $408,000 for Phoenix Children's Hospital. Looking at the latest tote board for the Give-A-Thon presented by your Valley Hyundai dealers. $408,000 so far, one day in. We are back with our Give-A-Thon, where every single week, usually this time of year, we call attention to this wonderful hospital in our valley that's one of the best, truly, in the world when it comes to children's hospitals.
We drive by it every day, me and you.
We do.
Every day.
$2.7 million, roughly, per day it costs to run that hospital. And it's why we take a lot of pride in raising money for it, because we've known people, we've worked with people whose kids have had to go to Phoenix Children's Hospital. It's such an invaluable part of our lives day to day here in the valley, and something like that you have to work hard to protect, Gambo.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, look, they rely on the support of generous people in the community. That's what they rely on, because they don't turn any children away at Phoenix Children's Hospital. They don't turn any children away. They've got over 60 children's programs and services. And look, there's kids in that hospital right now that are battling cancer, that are battling brain injuries and heart defects, and they need life-saving care. Phoenix Children's Hospital takes a lot of pride in offering that care, and the best care. They hire the best doctors in the world to come work here to give these kids a chance at life.
They do. And thanks to you, and thanks to our terrific partners in this event, we're able to raise the money that we do, and we appreciate you being involved. We appreciate Fry's Food Stores being involved. They stop by with this check presentation.
Hi, my name is Pam Giannotti, and I am the Corporate Affairs Manager for Fry's Food Stores. We are again excited to be part of this year's Give-A-Thon. We have been a proud partner of Phoenix Children's for many years. And on behalf of Fry's Food Stores, I'm honored to be able to present this check in the amount of $5,000. Thank you, Phoenix Children's, for being there for our community, providing hope and strength for so many kids.
And we thank you, Pam, and Fry's
Pam
Food Stores.
Pam Giannotti. I always had to do the interview with her because of the long Italian name.
You're the only one who
I was
gonna,
the one, yeah.
You were going to stick that landing, you know?
Yeah.
And you did. Yeah, you absolutely did. Thank you, Pam, and thank you, Fry's Food Stores, for that $5,000 donation. Very generous. The reason why we do it are stories like Gia's. Gia endured multiple forms of seizures on a daily basis. She was exclusively fed by a G-tube. She couldn't control her head, her hands, her fingers, her feet, or her toes. She could only make eye contact for brief seconds at a time. She faced more challenges in 2 years than most in a lifetime. And despite all of that, Gia was a happy, happy girl, and her unwillingness to quit will no doubt forge the way for better treatments and hopefully a cure to help future generations of children. This is Gia's story.
Hi, I'm Angela Capello.
I'm Jeremy Capello, and this is Gia's story. We had a completely normal pregnancy. Everything was fine until the moment Gia was born, and then our world spiraled out of control.
Gia, unfortunately, had one of the most severe variants of KIF1A.
It's a rare neurodegenerative disorder.
It can rob children their ability to see, walk, talk. It is something that just happened, and we still don't know why. They put her in a little incubator, and the ambulance took her to Phoenix Children's. I was just so scared, and our GI doctor could see that and looked at me and hugged me and was like, we're gonna figure this out. There has been 5 children that have had her exact mutation. Most of them pass away anywhere from 11 months to about 3 years of age. She was 24/7 care. Mm-hmm. We saw a lot of doctors.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of the doctors and the staff at PCH became extended members of our family.
We were, unfortunately, one of those families that had to make really awful decisions, but can look back and we have the best memories of her because of the staff at PCH.
They were really in it with us. We're going to figure this out. We're going to make her as comfortable as we possibly can.
The child life specialists became my best friends. Because of that, we have so many beautiful memories with Gia.
Truly remarkable to see that level of care.
Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah. I'm hoping we get to heaven. He looks at us all like we're kids. Shameless and painless and perfect and ageless. Forgives all the wrong that we did.
When life kind of gets hard, it's really not that hard when you put things into perspective of what our daughter went through. She was a fighter.
She was. We almost lost her several times. Mm-hmm. And as weak as she was so strong.
To me, she's an inspiration. I can see her inspiring our other children as well.
Gia.
She's an inspiration.
Gia passed away on Christmas Day, 2020. She was a year and 10 months old. And that story just resonates so deeply because you hear the positivity in the voices of her parents. You know, that they talk so glowingly of the hospital when they should be so sad about it. And that, to me, is what stands out about that story.
Because as that's going on, I'm thinking to myself, did she live? Is she alive? Did she not make it? I'm going back and forth because I can't tell. And I'm listening to that, and it was this hope that she was going to make it, and then, you know, in the end, you know, she wasn't able to make it. But, you know, I mean, the fact that there's only 5 children,
yeah,
you know, had this, what she had, only 5 children, and they were able to help her as much as they could. And they talked about just how the staff was in it with them, because the staff gets so involved, you know, emotionally in caring for these children. And they love these children, the staff there, and we've seen it firsthand. So it's another sad story because, yep, as we all know, not every kid makes it.
We are now hoping you will hear that story and you'll get involved. We are in the middle of a match right now from BOK Financial. They will match dollar for dollar your donation when you call the Desert Financial Phone Bank, 602-933-4567. What we're asking out of you for Phoenix Children's Hospital is to become a champion of hope. $20 or more per month, and we will take a teddy bear upstairs in your name to one of the kids at the hospital right now. If you call the Desert Financial Phone Bank right now, 602-933-4567. That's 602-933-4567. We are in the middle of a match.
BOK Financial is matching your donation up to $7,500 right now, but only when you call 602-933-4567. Because if you do that and become a champion of hope,
well, you got some great incentives, too. You can get a $20 online voucher from Papa John's or a Superstar Car Wash, $20 gift card, and a free pass, kids pass, to the Wildlife World Zoo. Become a champion of hope, just $20 a month. And all you have to do is call 602-933-4567. That's 602-933-4567.
And we will take a teddy bear upstairs in your name. In fact, the train Teddy Bear Express heading up right now because we've already had several people call and become champions of hope. $20 or more per month, and a teddy bear is delivered. So as the train Teddy Bear Express at Phoenix Children's Hospital goes up, please don't forget, you can call right now and have your donation matched. The Desert Financial Phone Bank, 602-933-4567. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, back to the Arizona Cardinals. Patrick Mahomes is a model that every young NFL quarterback should want to be like, but according to Cliff, it's just not accurate to compare Kyler to Mahomes, and he'll tell you why next on the Burns and Gambo Show.